Hey, good morning. Appreciate this opportunity to speak with you. Since we're in injury prevention, I'm not going to refer to it as a rapid-fire session. We're going to call it the sprint round. And what I'm going to kind of start and finish with is if you have influence in your community at your state or local level with asking what was previously a core module on firearms ownership and storage, that you give that some consideration. We've been asking it in our state 2013, 15, this year, us and another state's asking it, and I understand it's going to be an optional module for the 2018 BRFS. So it's a great opportunity for us all to just kind of have that basic public health assessment information that'll allow the researchers to advance things, and how when we combine that with our child death review information, we can understand risk and benefit of firearm ownership and things we need to work on to improve. One of the things I like to point out in my injury presentations is that when we combine homicide, the huge burden of suicide and all those unintentional injury causes, it's the third leading cause of death for the United States, Washington residents, and it just doesn't get the kind of appreciation in terms of resource at federal, state, to local levels that other issues get, and it's just not commensurate with the burden. We saw 600 Washington residents die from firearm injury, so that's like 15% of our injury burden total. And what's kind of the underappreciated thing media-wise is the huge number of suicides that influence our firearm burden rate. So when we kind of deconstruct suicide by method, we see that nationally firearms are a little over half. And part of the reason that this is important is that for some of our western states, you know, it's as much as 60, 70, 80% of cases. And so it's, and we line that up with the lethality of firearms compared to all other methods combined. And some studies have lethality of firearms at, you know, 90%. And so, well, the numbers of poisonings and other cuttings are huge. There's no making that phone call, no calling out a friend once the trigger is pulled. It's lethal means restriction is part of our national strategies on suicide prevention, a call to action by the U.S. Surgeon General, and it's goal six. So safe storage means that all the firearms are locked and unloaded, and ammunition is locked up and stored separately. And we have a website that's used nationally, lockitup.org, and I'd encourage you to go there to take a look because it has good research papers. We have some reduced price devices with some of our partners. And one of the things that we've learned working with our Harborview Injury Prevention and Research Center is that oftentimes firearm owners are willing to like store all the firearms except for the one they want quick access to in case there's criminal intruder, and I think some of the paranoia with misplaced paranoia with a terrorist coming into your home. But if they want that quick access, a quick action lockbox, you can get at your firearm within 3 seconds, but it'll still prevent the theft, the child access, and all the and even it shows some protective effect within domestic disputes and so forth. Dr. David Grossman, I should have cited this here, a really strong JAMA paper that noted that firearm suicide among children and adolescents can be reduced by almost 80%, and then the unintentional shootings up to 85%. So we know there's a huge benefit to safely storing firearms. Part of what I want to talk about, too, just before I get into the module itself, is that through our child death review, we've been seeing lots of cases where the firearms were in a lockbox or a safe, but the key is kind of thought to be hidden, and that child is accessing the key. So we really need to kind of improve that safe storage. So the module just basically asks, do you have a firearm in the home? And for, you know, in our case, 60% of respondents, the answer is going to be no, so it's not the norm, and they're just going to move on to the next question. So it's very quick in action there. And then if that firearm is now loaded, then we'd ask that fourth question, is that loaded firearm also unsecured? So challenging results for us is that we saw that we've got about 1.8 million adult firearm owners. And the disturbing thing, I think, for us is that now we're up in the realm where the majority, 51% of those firearms are unsafely stored. That means they're unlocked. We used to see 37% was kind of the norm, and when we were seeing the as a core module in 2004, and the huge numbers of children that have access to that. Many of you are familiar with child death review, so we examine all the factors that go into those deaths that it led to and would have prevented them. So we took all our child death review information. We saw that 18 had died with firearm suicide, and we could identify that ownership in most of those cases. And by combining BRFIS with our child death review information, we see that the risk of child firearm suicide, youth and child firearm suicide, is 9 times greater. Evidence of then safely stored firearms, and I know this is not unique to our county and our state, but we see guns going to school 91 times most recently. Our healthy youth survey indicates kids find it very easy to get a firearm. And then our law enforcement are really concerned because almost $4 million worth of firearms are stolen each year. And it's just a great opportunity for the public health community to show some leadership on this by teaming up with your local elected officials and your law enforcement on voluntary safe storage. It's something everybody should be able to agree on, and having that good basic public health assessment. And so the guy on the far left is one of the owners of our big sporting goods store. He's totally on board with this. So with that, thank you very much.